Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1 of Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today the QCWA Journal, quadricentrally wireless association journal. The headquarters for QCWA is Framingham, Massachusetts, P.O. Box 3247 in Framingham, Massachusetts, 01705. The editor is Douglas Walbridge. The telephone for the business office is area 508-405-1930. The fax 508-405-1965. And they can be emailed at qcwagm@rcn.com. This recorded material is being produced by the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is intended for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members and, of course, QCWA members only. Handy Hemps may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. And a website for the Handy Ham System, www.handyham.org. The QCWA Officers and Board of Directors. President, John B. Johnston, W3BE. Vice President, Leonard Nathanson, W8RC. Secretary, Walter Supina, N3WS. Treasurer, Frank Harris, WA4PAM. General Manager, Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD. Now for the directors, Leroy Baldwin, W0OFY, Val Irwin, W5PUT, Carolyn Harrison, WB0OUM, Tony Hirsch, W8RSH, William Pasternak, WA6ITF, Kenneth Ken D. Olke, VE6AFO, Blanche Randalls, W4GXZ, Ed Yoder, W3YMB. Our first piece is from the President, John B. Johnston, W3BE. Chapter Plans for the New Year. Greetings, QCWA members. Now's the time to make your chapter plans for the new year, 2007. Your chapter will enjoy better programs when you have such a plan around which you can obtain interesting speakers and arrange for field trips. Take photographs of each event and send in the best two, along with 500 or so words of text for your chapter reports in the QCWA Journal. They go to our GM, Chuck Walbridge, W-A-L-B-R-I-D-G-E, call K1IGW, Kilo 1, India, Gulf Delta, at the following email, qcwagm@rcn.com. Your first gathering will probably be your official annual meeting. Strike out February 9th. 10 and 11 for the fabulous Orlando Hamcation. Also strike out May 18, 19, and 20 for the great Dayton Hamvention. We want to greet all of you there at our QCWA booth. Add to your schedule the flying of our banner at your local Hamfests. Many Hamfest sponsors will provide a table gratis for a QCWA chapter. This makes a fine gathering point for our members and prospective members. It is our best opportunity to explain to our amateur service community just what our association is all about. You can invite those first licensed any time before 1983 to become a part of it. Explain to them that our QCWA is a celebration by their fellow hams who understand their valuable contribution to our fabulous hobby. QCWA is a lot of fun, and we do good work. Let them know that they will become friends with interesting hams who understand and appreciate what amateur radio has accomplished. Be sure to inform our webmaster of your meeting schedule and locations. The listing of our chapters' events is invaluable while planning a trip. It makes it possible to work into your itinerary a visit to as many of our chapters as possible. Visiting with friends and making new ones can be the highlight of your next journey. Subtitle, Section 97.1 All-Stars for 2007. It is also time to call for your chapter's nomination for our QCWA Section 97.1 Presidential Honors Awards for 2007. 5 of these awards will be selected by April 1, 2007 and will be announced in our Summer 2007 QCWA Journal. For your nominee to be considered, please submit before March 15, 2007. Your nomination to Director Carolyn Harrison. Call WB0OUM. Her address, P.O. Box 467, Bolivar, Missouri. That's B-O-L-I-V-A-R-M-O. Zip code 65613-0467. Carolyn's phone number is area 417-777-7777. The email, carolynwb0oum@allteel.net. Carolyn is the chairman of our chapter relations standing committee that is administering this program. On January 31, 1951, our Federal Communications Commission placed into our operating rules a statement of the type of amateur radio service it expects us to provide in return for being allowed to make use of some highly valuable radio spectrum. The statement of basis and purpose did not come from any international body. It applies only to the places where the FCC regulates the amateur service. The statement survives today in Section 97.1 of our rules. It is important that we pause annually to reflect upon just whom it is among our fellow members that we admire as our role models in helping to fulfill each of these 5 principles during the previous year. They are our 97.1 All-Stars. We are indebted to them for what they are doing and for reminding us of our wonderful privilege in making use of an increasingly valuable public resource. Now, chapters. Here is the call for your nominations. Include with the name and call sign of your nominee the specific award for which you are making your nomination and a statement of your reasons for making your nomination. There are 5 Presidential Honor Awards to be presented. They are, number 1, Section 97.1, Sub A, for service to the public as a voluntary non-commercial communication service, particularly with respect to providing emergency communications. Number 2, Section 97.1B, for continuing and extending the amateur operator's proven ability to contribute to the advancement of the radio art. 3. Section 97.1C, for advancing skills in both communication and technical phases of the radio art. 4. Section 97.1D, for expanding the existing reservoir within our amateur service of trained operators, technicians, and electronic experts. 5. Section 97.1E, for continuing and extending the amateur operator's unique ability to enhance international goodwill. Here's your opportunity to recognize a deserving QCWA member in your chapter for helping make amateur radio the greatest hobby in the world. It is our way of thanking them for helping prove that it is truly in the public interest to allow persons interested in radio technology solely with a personal aim and without pecuniary interest to make use of highly valuable electromagnetic spectrum for carrying out self-training, intercommunication, and technical investigations. Now, under recent visits with our chapters included York County, Pennsylvania, Chapter 165, Picnic, Colonial Chapter Number 166, Parksburg, Pennsylvania Picnic. Also, our QCWA banner was flying proudly at the Frederick, Maryland Hemp Fest, Howard County Hemp Fest, Maryland, the ARRL Maryland State Convention, the ARRL New England Division Boxborough Convention, the FAR Hemp Fest in Gaithersburg, Maryland, and the Tidewater Hemp Fest, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Here's to another great QCWA year. It's signed DEW3BE. Let's go now to the General Manager's Report. General Manager's Chuck Walbridge, WALBRIDGE. His call is K1IGD, Kilo 1, India Golf Delta. Winter 2006. Convention 2006. By all reports, the Wild Rose Chapter in Calgary did an outstanding job on their convention. Congratulations to Ken Olke and his fine committee for a superb job in planning and executing the convention activities. Unfortunately, Jan developed a severe leg infection that kept us from attending. We missed all the friends that we met at past conventions, and we look forward to seeing all of you at the Denver Convention in 2007. Chapter Reports. Trying to provide a journal for our members that is diverse, interesting, and informative is a balancing act that at times requires some rules to allow a fair and balanced publication. In that regard, all future chapter reports will need to follow these limits set by the publication standing committee. 500 words and 2 photos maximum. When taking photos, group together those receiving awards rather than individual photos. Those can always be posted on the chapter webpage. When a chapter report is submitted, please include the chapter number in the title and with any photo submitted. Preferred formats for reports are a Word document, .doc, RTF, or plain text. We cannot accept files from Microsoft Works. Typed files are accepted, but not preferred, and will be scanned to convert them to a digital format. Photos should be at the maximum of your digital camera in JPG format. Prints from film cameras are acceptable and will be scanned for publications. Separate emails for your text and photos is acceptable. In that some internet providers may not allow large files, but please include the chapter number on all submissions. Action by the Board of Directors. QCWA's bylaws specify the rules and regulations used to govern the organization on a variety of issues. One of these is the establishment of the dues paid by our membership. These funds are used to conduct the business side of QCWA's activities. At the board meeting in Calgary, the board, which has authority to set dues, voted to increase our member dues. The main reasons behind this were the many cost increases that have occurred over the years. The last dues increase was April 1, 1996, with increases of $5 from 1 and 2 years, and $20 for 3 years. Dues increases are not a popular item any organization wants to address, but continued increases in our cost of doing business have caused QCWA to use funds from one of our investment accounts, a condition that cannot continue. In considering the increase, the board also evaluated possible savings as well as non-dues sources for revenue. The Finance Subcommittee is evaluating these options. The action by the board in Calgary did not address the total due structure, but only the U.S. domestic dues. Changes for Canadian and international dues have been proposed. A listing of all proposed dues can be found on page 56. As of the publishing date for this journal, the Board of Directors has not given final approval for these changes. Refer to the QCWA webpage for possible updates. Year's end. It is hard to believe that Jan and I are completing our third year in the headquarters office. It has been an interesting experience, one that has expanded our horizons with visits to conventions, chapter meetings, and the interaction with so many members via phone, internet, email, and in person. For all this, it has been our pleasure. With Dayton 2007 not that many months away, we look forward to greeting many of you at our booth. CUSO Party dates for 2007. Spring Party, March 31 through April 1, 2007. Fall Party, September 15 through September 16, 2007. Log sheets are available from headquarters or the QCWA webpage. We wish all of you a happy holiday season and the best for the coming year. Signed, 73 Chuck Walbridge, K1 IGD, General Manager. Following is a list of the QCWA scholarship winners. The Foundation for Amateur Radio Incorporated. It's sectioned out here, folks. QCWA named scholarships, $1,500 each. Ralph Hesslinger, W2CVF, chapter member scholarship, presented to Steven Schirini, KC8IDJ, Dover, Ohio. The Donald and Phyllis Doughty family scholarship goes to Justin T. Cates, K-A-T-E-S, KB3-J-U-V, Lewis, Delaware. The Leland Smith Sr., call K-5-K-L, Memorial Scholarship, goes to Rebecca Rich, R-I-C-H, KB0-V-V-T, Raytown, Missouri. Now, the following are the QCWA named memorial scholarships, $1,000 each. The Jacobson-Kelleher Memorial Scholarship goes to Jonathan Trope, T-R-O-U-P, K-0-D-E, of Berthoud, Colorado. The Leo Mayerson, his call, W-0-G-F-Q. Family Living Scholarship to Francis T. Gradjian, G-R-A-D-I-J-A-N, call KD5-HTB of Carrollton, Texas. The following group, the QCWA Memorial Scholarships, $1,000 each. Krista D. Birmingham, KB2-MER, Ridgewood, New Jersey. Stephen R. Chimmel, C-H-I-M-E-L, K-A-3-S-R-C, Clark's Summit, Pennsylvania. Peter R. Gautry, G-A-U-T-R-Y, K-C-0-C-L-Y, St. Paul, Minnesota. Nathaniel Heatwall, H-E-A-T-W-O-L-E, WZ3AR, Damascus, Maryland. Michael A. Creuter, C-R-E-U-T-E-R, A-A-3-S-Q, State College, Pennsylvania. Carrie, spelled with a K, K-E-R-R-Y. Carrie K. Manderbach, M-A-N-D-E-R-B-A-C-H, K-C-0-V-N-H, St. Louis, Missouri. Reed S. Morin, M-O-R-I-N-E, W-4-R-S-M, Wilmington, North Carolina. Jonna Preston, J-O-H-A-N-N-A, Preston, W-5-J-L-P, Austin, Texas. Stephanie Schaefer, K-C-2-N-S-A, Binghamton, New York. Stephen T. Simpson, KC8IOY, Ocala, Florida. Jonathan Van Kooten, That's a V-A-N, capital K-O-O-T-E-N, Van Kooten, KC0SLB, Harvey, Iowa. Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-O-N, Wilson, KC0INX, Bloomfield, Colorado. QCWA congratulates our scholarship winners for 2006. And for your listeners, I must tell you that there is a very nice biographical sketch on, I suppose, just about every one of these fine young people, relatively young anyway, and a lot of good-looking young ladies. It sure does bode well for amateur radio's futures to see so many good-looking young women as well as fine-looking gentlemen winning awards of this nature for their true and honest efforts in amateur radio. Folks, before I leave this section, there is a listing here of Memorial Scholarship Fund. There are two columns, name and honoring. I'll include that here, not a lot of detail on this one, but for the chapters and who is honoring, that's important. Ralph Hasslinger, honoring W4AMJ. Chapter 89, honoring K4HYY. Chapter 108, QCWA Silent Keys. Chapter 196, W3JI. Chapter 45, Rose Jeck, J-E-C-K. Chapter 45 again, Kathleen Taylor. Chapter 45 a third time, Herman Kramer. Chapter 79, K0AOE. Chapter 51, W5EKE. Folks, I'll make another comment here as I start looking through the next piece. This material is furnished to me, Bob Zeta, call N1BLF, here in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, when the publication is made ready. And I usually am instructed what particular parts of it to record, because you have to realize, of course, that this material is basically intended for the vision or reading impaired members of the organization. So not everything is included. We wouldn't have the time or the space on one recorded disc or CD for that matter. So occasionally you might be told that so-and-so or thus-and-so was in the publication, and you could say back to that individual, geez, I didn't hear Bob Zeta tell me that. Just so you know, it's the way it has to be done. We try to be fair and square with everyone about it. Now, one of the rules say Q&A at the very end of that particular contribution for this journal. There is an appreciation commentary. It goes as, RTRS, Super Ham of the Month, is Director Carolyn Harrison. Call WB0OUM, Whiskey Bravo Zero, Oscar Uniform Mike, new chair of our Chapter Relations Standing Committee. Thank you, Carolyn, for all of the fine work that you have done for amateur radio. You are one of those fascinating people who make this wonderful hobby happen. And there is a very nice-looking photograph of Carolyn Harrison, WB0OUM. Any of you folks that are listening to this recording who would like to correspond with the author John B. Johnston, W3BE, his mailing address is 17701, Bowie Mill Road, B-O-W-I-E, Mill Road, Durwood, Maryland, D-E-R-W-O-O-D, M-D, zip code 20855-1608. And his email is lowercase john at johnston.net. Going to chapter reports, I'll read those that are highlighted for me. Chapter 1, Cleveland, Ohio. Our October meeting featured Chapter 1's annual awards presentation honoring those who have advanced the cause of QCWA, the chapter, amateur radio, and the community. George Keltner, K8SGM, was named Ham of the Year. Craig Cawley, N8ZT, received the Chapter President's Award. Devere D. Logan, W1HEO, was given the Paul Cornell, W8EFW, Memorial Award. And the QCWA Chapter's Meritorious Award went to Alphonse L. Lada, W8OZC. A special alternate net control award was presented to Bob Robertson, KC8UIQ. Veterans Hospital Station Volunteers honors included John Brayson, KB8ZXW, and Harry Winfield, K8LXH. A special contribution award went to Mary Ingram, XYL of Chapter President Dick Ingram, WAATPP. QCWA Service Awards were presented to Richard Ingram, W8ATPP, for 50 years, Charles Jackson, W8QXF, for 50 years, David Staley, K8AUH, for 50 big ones, Howard Reschel, W8GVE, 55 years, Marvin Goldfarb, W8YEO, for 60, Jack Goldfarb, W8WGO, for 65. John Misick, W8VRJ, also for 65. Clyde Rothstein, W8QHM, for 70. George Cox, W8PJN, for 70. And Onerio Sabato, W8PIU, for 70. Cleveland Chapter 1 welcomes its newest member, David Parris, P-A-R-R-I-S, call AB8SB, Alpha Bravo 8, Sierra Bravo. The chapter was represented at the Cleveland Ham Fest, September 24, with a booth adjacent to the Ham Radio Promotion Project, co-sponsored by the chapter. The promotional project video, titled Amateur Radio, Wireless Window to the World, was shown. Copies of the DVD are now available for a $20 contribution to the project. That was submitted by Devere D. Logan. First name is spelled D-E-V-E-R-E. D. Logan, L-O-G-A-N, W-1-H-E-O. Moving along now to Chapter 10, Michigan, M-I. As 2006 draws to a close, the members of Chapter 10 wish to extend season's greetings to all of the QCWA membership and hope that you have a happy and prosperous new year in 2007. It is with deepest regret that we must report the following silent keys from our chapter. Ronald G. Eichhorn, WA8MYT, from Madison Heights, Michigan. Clifford Graff, W8QM, from Saginaw, Michigan, and Theodore Kangas, W8HV, from Ishpeming, Michigan. A donation is being made to the QCWA Memorial Scholarship Fund in their memory. We extend our sincere sympathies to their respective families, and we will always remember their many contributions to the QCWA and amateur radio. We would like to welcome the following new members to our chapter. Dwayne Vassold, K-8-C-C-E, Freeland, Michigan. William Hund, H-U-N-D, W-B-A-D-R-M, Menisty, Michigan. Robert Cook, N-8-I-Z-F, Petoskey, Michigan. Richard Buckstiegel, W-D-A-J-V-M, Petoskey, Michigan. Thomas Baylor, KBATYJ, Big Rapids, Michigan. Kenneth Baker, W8NEV, Leroy, Michigan. David Wilcox, K8WPE, Travis City, Michigan. Thomas Hansen, N8DGD, Grand Rapids. David Hayes, VE3JX, Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada. Louis Vesio, W8LPV, Saginaw, Michigan. Charles Robertson, K8BLL, Stevenson, Michigan. And Linda Sadler, WB8CNQ, Chase, Michigan. Thanks to all of our members for doing an outstanding job of recruiting new members in 2006. Our annual summer picnic was held on August 16th with 45 members and guests in attendance. After a great barbecue meal donated and prepared by Doug Almquist, WB8VOF, and his XYL, Mary Ellen, KC8WKN, Steve Sadler, WB8ZNR, and his XYL, Linda, WB8ZNQ, we were treated to a wonderful presentation on the history of telegraphy presented by Carl Rosma, W8KGR. One of the highlights of his presentation was the participation of two members who were asked to operate a large wooden replica of a J, 38 straight key, using their left foot. Carl's presentation was very informative and fun, and he brought several dozen of his choice antique CW keys for all to view. At the conclusion of his presentation, Carl was presented with an honorary membership in the Green Visor Society by Mark Derby, K8MHZ, and his daughter, Nicole, K0LEY. Presentations were also made by Walter Maxwell, W2DU, and Alex Polly, Politica, K8FLA. The following CQWA service awards were presented to Ken Baker, W8NEV, and Dwayne Vassold, K8CCE. Both of these members received the QCWA 50th Anniversary of Licensing Award and the QCWA 50 Years of Continuous Licensing Award. Congratulations to Dwayne and Ken for their accomplishments. Chapter 10 has changed the frequency of the CWNet to 3.702 MHz, which is held on Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Standard Time, and Mike Hall, WB8ICN, as the net control station. We invite all QCWA members to join us on 3.702 MHz on our CWNet for lots of good fellowship and fun. We would like to extend our thanks to Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD, General Manager, and his XYL Jan for their outstanding service to all of our chapter needs throughout this past year. Thanks, Chuck and Jan, for a job well done. Additional pictures and news of our chapter activities may be found on the Chapter 10 webpage located on the QCWA national website at www.qcwa.org. Click on Site Index, then click on Chapter 010. We appreciate the use of this webpage provided to all QCWA chapters at no charge, and encourage all chapters to make use of this great perk. To post information about your chapter activities, membership accomplishments and awards, pictures, etc., contact Bob Ruske, R-O-S-K-E, call N0UF, November 0 Uniform Foxtrot, for details about your web page. We would like to encourage all members of QCWA to become active in recruiting new members. This fine organization will only be as strong and effective as we, the members, wish to make it. Please help do your part by promoting QCWA to others, encourage them to join you on your chapter nets and in chapter activities, tell them what QCWA means to you, and encourage them to join. Nobody else will do the recruiting for us. It is our responsibility, and we should be proud to become active in the recruiting process. Promote the accomplishments of your members by giving them recognition in your chapter news article in the journal. If you do not have a journal article each quarter, discuss it with your membership and submit an article on a regular basis. If you need assistance with establishing an article for the journal, please contact the general manager, Chuck Walbridge, W-A-L-B-R-I-D-G-E, K-1-I-G-D. He will be happy to assist you with the details. Any amateur from Michigan or surrounding states wishing to join QCWA and or Chapter 10 may do so by contacting our secretary, Jim Bishop, B-I-S-H-O-P, call W8JFB, Whiskey 8, Juliet Foxtrot Bravo, at the following email, call sign w8jfb@arrl.net, or call the following number, area 906-643-7103, for details and assistance. This long report was submitted by James F. Bishop, W8JFB, Secretary Treasurer. Next, we have Chapter 12, Andy Clark, Miami, Florida. The most recent Chapter 12 meeting was held on July 15, 2006. We had 18 members and guests present. Chapter 12 meets monthly, 12 noon, at Steak and Ale, Miami, Florida, the third Saturday of each month. Officers for this year are Harry Pilafian, P-I-L-A-F-I-A-N, called W4SQG, President. Vice President Joe Porsche, P-O-E-R-S-C-H-K-E. Probably killed that one, Joe. Sorry. WB4HIS. Art Roush, W4VZ, Secretary. Marion Roush, WB4RFB, Treasurer. Audrey Pilafian, KB4ZQU, suggested the chapter obtain films promoting amateur radio from ARRL and donate to the school's audiovisual center to be available to the schools in the county. If you are in Miami, feel free to join us at our meetings. Visitors are always welcome. Remember, Chapter 12 meets monthly, 12 noon, at Steak and Ale, Miami, Florida, the third Saturday of each month. That was submitted by Art Roush, that's spelled R-A-U-C-H, call W4VZ, Whiskey 4, Victor Zulu, Secretary. Jumping ahead now to Chapter 45, Citrus, Florida. On a sad note, our chapter VP, David Flagg, N4GBH, became a silent key. We will miss Dave's service to our chapter. Carl Zelich, AA4MI, was elected VP to complete Dave's term. On a much brighter note, Al LaPeter, W2AS, was presented with the Distinguished Service Award. He was one of five 2006 QCWA honorees listed in the fall issue of the QCWA Journal. Al has been an active member of the Citrus chapter for over 15 years, much of that time as president. His high energy level keeps us moving. Carl Zelich received his 50-year award at the same meeting. Congratulations to Carl. Lewis McFadden, W5DID, was reelected a director of AMSAT. Lou has been able to provide us with many interesting presentations at our chapter meetings. Our quarterly social meeting was held at the China First Buffet with good attendance. It is a good opportunity to renew contact with members whose schedules prevent them from attendance at the monthly luncheons. That was submitted by Emmett Ward, WA5EWN, Secretary. Heading out west now to Chapter 58, Colorado. 2007 is the 60th anniversary of the QCWA, and Chapter 58 is pleased to host the 2007 QCWA International Convention next October. A convention planning committee is working hard on your behalf to make your visit an enjoyable one. We are pleased to have QCWA President John B. Johnston, W3BE, and his wife Betty, N3PKX, visit us on their way back from the Calgary Convention. They took some time from their touring to join a few of us for dinner on Tuesday, October 3rd, and provided us with some encouraging words of wisdom. We're looking forward to their return visit for the Sexagenary Convention in Denver next October. That was filed by Dwayne Thompson, KB6CC. Well, we're heading back northeast again, north of east. Chapter 65, Niagara Frontier, New York. Many of the members do not realize that there is an average of 3 months between report submission and the time you receive your journal. By the time you read this, significant events have already taken place in your club. A sizable amount of our membership, hopefully, has enjoyed the fellowship and festivities of our Christmas party. Feliz Navidad. As of this writing, we are anticipating the election of officers and board of directors for 3-year terms. Congratulations and good luck to the successful candidates. Our chapter is suffering the same fate that has befallen many others. The influx of new members has not kept pace with non-renewals, relocations, and silent keys. We should all take an active part in recruitment of new members. Let's make 2007 one of our best years ever. Our weekly net is every Sunday at 13:30 local time at 3900 kilohertz using Club Call W2SD Whiskey 2 Sierra Delta. We know that it's hard to pull yourself away from the Buffalo Bills game on TV, but please make an effort to make an appearance. Surprise the faithful regulars by joining us. That was submitted by Larry Rybecki, WA2ARA, Vice President, Acting Secretary. Now we'll head north into Canada. Chapter 70, National Capital, ON. I suppose that's Ontario, I'm not sure. On May 16, 2006, Chapter 70 held its annual Spouses Night Dinner meeting at which 58 members, spouses, and guests were in attendance. This was an especially entertaining evening as there were several presentations. Director Doug Leach, VE3XK, presented a Meritorious Service Award to Dr. Jack Bell Rose, VE2CV. Licensed in 1949, Jack is a life member of QCWA and the IEEE Antennas and Propagation Society, a fellow of the Radio Club of America, member Radio Amateurs of Canada, RAC, member and TA ARRL. Although retired, Jack, radio scientist emeritus, spends a few days each week at the Communications Research Center Canada, that's CRCC, in Ottawa. Jack has authored many well-known articles and papers on antennas in various amateur radio publications around the world, as well as professional organizations. Jack also has a strong interest in promoting the remembrance of Reginald Aubrey Fessenden. Doug also presented the following QCWA ear pins and certificates. 60-year pin and certificate goes to Ken Shrevens, VE3IJ. 50-year pin and certificate, Tom Bartello, VE3ELM. 45-year pin, Ken Olke, VE6AFO. 40-year pin, Robert McKenzie, VA3RKM. 40-year pin also, James Rowland, VE3GHR. 35-year pin, Ed Pugh, P-U-G-H, VA3PU. 35-year pin also, Bill Buren, B-R-U-I-N, VE3JBW. Croft Taylor, VE3CT, past president, QCWA, on behalf of QCWA President John B. Johnston, W3BE, presented a QCWA Presidential Award to George Rausch, VE3BNO, for his excellent work as chairman of the Activities Committee. This work involves administering the various nets sponsored by QCWA and the QCWA Operating Awards Program. George also received a 60-year pin and certificate. On 19 September, during the chapter quarterly dinner meeting, Doug, VE3XK, presented the following. 50-year anniversary award and pin to Joe Parkinson, VE3JG, and a 50-year anniversary award and pin to new Chapter 70 member Alan Goodacre, VE3HX. 40-year pins to Norm Reschle, VE3LC, and Tim Evangelatos, VE3MY. 35-year pin to Ken Asmus. 30-year pins to Ying Hum, VA3YH, who was absent, and Wayne Getchell, VE3CZO, also absent. And lastly, 25-year pins to Richard Fersch, VE3IAY, absent, and Ben Price, VE3CDA, absent. Following the dinner, David Kahn, VE3KL, Chapter 70 member, guest speaker for the evening, gave a talk on polarization in nature, technology, and radio. David, a regular contributor to the title, The Canadian Amateur Magazine, showed how polarization is accomplished and its effect on nature, the medical field, certain insects, horizontal, vertical, and circular polarization of antennas, and LCD displays. As an example of a circular polarized antenna, David brought along a 900 megahertz skew planar antenna, as built by Graham IDE, VE3BYT. David will be giving this same talk at the upcoming QCWA convention in Calgary, 28 to 30 September. That was probably 2006. Claire Fowler, VE3NPC, thanked David for his interesting and informative talk. That was filed by Claire Fowler, VE3NPC, secretary. Folks, there are quite a few other chapter reports. I just don't have the time to put them into one CD or one cassette recording for the sake of condensation. But I appreciate the fact that many chapter secretaries did indeed go to the effort of filing these reports. As you can tell by listening, many of them are very, very detailed, and it can be a little tedious to record all these call signs for you, but I guess that's the tradition with the Quarter Century Wireless Association, and they do not want to diminish the importance of identifying the individual with a call sign that are printed here. But it does take time. I'm going to switch now to articles as time allows for approximately 80 minutes. We're running at about 47 minutes right now. Our first featured article is titled Geeks, G-E-E-K-S. Geeks, a chapterized book about growing up as a kid ham in the Big Apple, by Bill Pasternak, called WA6ITF, edited by Lou Ann Kigg, WB6HP. If some of you are not aware, Bill was one of the newest additions to the list of directors for the Quarter Century Wireless Association at the recent elections. A prologue. Have you ever heard the story of the kid ham and the frog? It goes this way. A newly licensed 16-year-old ham is walking down a lonely road when he hears a voice. He looks around, but can't see anyone, so he walks on. Then he hears the voice again, so he again stops and looks around, but does not see anything. He's about to walk on when the voice says, "Look down here at your feet." So he looks down, but the only thing he sees is an ugly green frog. He is about to move on when the frog says to him, "Pick me up." Astounded, he picks up the frog, and it begins to talk some more. The frog says, "If you kiss me, I will turn into a beautiful young princess, and I will stay with you forever and ever." The young ham stares at the frog for a minute, and suddenly pushes the frog into the pocket on his jeans. The frog says, "What are you doing? All you have to do is kiss me, and I'll turn into a beautiful princess and stay with you forever and ever." The kid ham takes the frog out of his pocket and says, "Look, I am only 16 years old. I just got my ham station, and I really have no time for girls. But a talking frog? Now, that's going to make for a lot of cool conversation over the repeater." I think that story really sets the tone for the rest of what I'm about to say. It's some of the experiences of a kid growing up in the big city who finds himself an outcast from local kids society because he does not have the physical prowess of the other children. So he finds his own niche in ham radio, and it leads him to happiness and success. It's a story, or a series of stories I know well, because the kids you are about to hear about are me and some of my closest teenage friends. In some cases, I have changed the names of those involved. The reason for this will be abundantly clear as you make your way through the pages. I hope you will enjoy reading it as much as we enjoyed living it. My Introduction to the Magic of the Ethereal Abyss. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, on February 7, 1942. Brooklyn is where I grew up and went to school. It's where I got my first job. It's where I went on my first date. It's where I bought my first car. It's where I got my ham radio ticket. And it's where I put my first CQ out over the airwaves. Back in the late 40s, we lived in an area called Bensonhurst on West 8th Street between Avenue O and Avenue P. In historical terms, that was the very earliest dawning of the communications age. Radio had been around since the early 20s, and now a new form of radio was emerging, radio with pictures. It was called television. And one fall afternoon in 1948, my father and I walked over to a store called Super Radio Sales on 70th Street and Bay Parkway. There he plunked down about $500 and bought an RCA 10 630 tabletop television set. But it wasn't that purchase that affected me as much as what else happened that day. While we were there, the store owner, Bill, who was also the radio repairman, called me over to his workbench to show me the innards of a television set, while warning me not to touch anything. I was only 5 or 6, but on that day, I was taught the electronics truism that goes, if you know what you are doing, keep one hand in your pocket. If you do not know what you are doing, keep both hands in your pocket. I have lived by that ever since. Bill could see I was interested and took the time to Elmer me through the way a TV set worked. The term Elmer is one given to a person involved in electronics and communications who goes out of his or her way to share knowledge with others, particularly the young. I was fascinated and hooked on this magic box that could make pictures from invisible signals traveling the ethereal abyss, although I had no concept of how it happened. But I had to know more about how it worked. I had to know where the pictures came from. I had to find out how the signals carrying sound and pictures got from some far-off place to the RCA television set and to the Emerson radios in my house. By the time I was 10, I knew how it worked. I had read every book in the library regarding the technical end of radio and television. By 12, I was under the after-school tutelage of another Elmer, Saul Rosenthal of Rose Radio and Photo on Bay Parkway. By the time I was 13, I had built a complete high-fidelity record playing system, mainly with cast-off radio parts found in the back of Saul Rosenthal's store. By 14, I was fixing TVs for my neighbors for free, except parts, much to the chagrin of the established repair shops. As a result, the various repair shops offered me part-time work, which I gladly accepted, so I could learn more. In both Seth Lowell Junior High School and Lafayette High School, I had a good part-time business fixing radios and TV sets for my fellow students and members of the faculty. I also had the reputation of being the person on the AV squad to call when something went wrong with a sound projector. Remember those Bell & Howell Victor and Ampro 16mm sound projectors that were wheeled in to show instructional motion pictures in your class? I was one of the guys who could thread them, operate them, and even repair one on the fly. Rather than regale you with all aspects of my torrid past, suffice to say that during my teen years, this interest in radio and television led me to my getting an amateur radio license, a stint fixing consumer electronics for General Electric and Sears, then jobs at various radio and television stations, and eventually out here in Los Angeles, and KTTV, Fox 11 Television, where I have spent the last 2.5 decades of my adult career. Would I be here if Dad had not gone to Super Radio to get a TV set? I really do not know. What I do know is that ham radio and broadcast television and radio have been a part of my life ever since. Such is the magic of the ethereal abyss. First, there was Babs. When I was a kid, not a ham kid, just a kid of about 13, I had my first experience with another youngster who was a radio amateur. As I recall, her name was Barbara Sue Parks. She called herself Babs for short. Back in 1955, at age 10, she had to have been the youngest ham on the air in the Metro New York area, if not the world. In some ways, one might say that Babs was one of my mentors. At least she was one inspiration for getting into ham radio. I had been hanging around the neighborhood radio and TV repair shops, learning all I could about electronics. One of these stores was owned by the late Warren Spindler, K2IXN, but at the time I did not know that Warren had an alphanumeric suffix attached to his name, courtesy of the FCC. That is, until one day when I walked into the store after school to see the repair bench loaded with what looked to be the inside of a World War II tank. Attached to these ugly boxes was a microphone. Warren was so engrossed in talking into it that he did not even notice me for a while. Warren would talk and then put down the microphone. A tiny voice, a little girl's voice, would issue forth from a speaker sitting on one of the boxes. I listened, and over the next few minutes, I heard Warren and the little girl talking about all sorts of electronic things that I could not understand. Have you any idea what this was doing to the ego of a young boy who prided himself on believing that he knew more than anyone else about radios and electrical things? Remember that kids did not have to be politically correct back then. Anyhow, Warren eventually introduced me over the radio to Babs. That's when I found out that she was only 10, and if I recall correctly, she lived in New Hyde Park, about 30 miles from Warren's store. To me, a 13-year-old who had just started traveling alone on the subway, New Hyde Park could have been on the other side of the galaxy, so I never met Babs, and I do not remember her call sign. I do remember trying to figure out what to say to her when Warren introduced us on the air. Remember, I was only 13. She was only 10. And this was the 1950s when boys and girls did not even date. At least, date officially, until they were at least 18 or 21. Note that the working adjective here is officially, but I digress. Talking to Babs for a few minutes that afternoon definitely left a lasting impression on me. I also wanted to be able to talk on an old radio, just like Warren and Babs. I think that part of it was more like, if a 10-year-old girl can do it, a 13-year-old boy should do it even better. After all, we boys were a lot smarter than any dumb girl. Or so we thought. So I asked Warren to teach me all I had to know to become a ham radio operator so that I could be on the radio like Babs. He promised to do it, but for some reason we never got started. Then Warren decided to close up shop and move on to bigger and better things. He eventually opened up a ham radio retail and service business in upstate New York. Sadly, about 2 decades ago, he became a silent key. Yet as I sit here and type, the memories of yesteryear are as alive in my mind as though they were happening today. To be continued. DEWA6ITF. The next featured piece here is titled Amateur Radio Stamps, by Robert Cash Dollar, CASHDOLLAR, call NR8U, November Romeo 8, uniform. Subtitle, 1260 Amateur Radio. After you have been in amateur radio for a while, you soon discover what a wide-open field of interest the hobby presents. There is Chasing DX, Rag Chewing on the Bands, 2 Meter FM, and a host of other on-air activities. Other activities include joining national organizations like the American Radio Relay League and, of course, the Quarter Century Wireless Association, when you're eligible, down to the local clubs in your area. Another area of interest for me was and is reading about the history of radio and the early days of amateur radio. As a newly minted tech, I started to haunt the local library for books on the pioneers of radio. During the course of all this reading, I came across the fact a stamp had been issued by the United States Post Office honoring amateur radio. Filed this information away and continued on with my reading and working on my upgrades. After a few years and as many visits to the FCC and one final visit with the then new volunteer examiner program, I made it to the top of the tree, so to speak. In the following years, my amateur radio experiences ran the gamut from Chasing DX, managing the letter O for the 8th Area Incoming QSL Bureau, to serving as emergency coordinator for my local ARIS group. All in all, a very rewarding and a lot of fun most of the time. As with all hobbies, sometimes after a while your interests can lag. It happened to me, and I sort of sat back and looked around and took stock of just what I had been interested in with amateur radio. My early interests in radio history came back to me, and with it the fact about an amateur radio stamp. Back to the library I went and started looking up books on stamp collecting. One of the first things I discovered was how similar the hobby of stamp collecting is to amateur radio. There is a national organization, the American Philatelic Society, local clubs, and even stamp shows, which are almost identical in nature to ham fests. I suppose if you dig deeply into other hobbies, you would find almost the same structure. I soon discovered stamp collecting was as varied as amateur radio. In stamp collecting, there are various subgroups like ham radio. People collect and study postmarks, stamp design, and history of stamps, and a host of other variations. For my purpose, I zeroed in on a subgroup called topicals. This category is broken down further into things like transportation on stamps, people on stamps, events on stamps, and a myriad of other items. The amateur radio stamp falls under this category. Just like all hobbies, stamp collecting has its buzzwords and definitions. A stamp can be collected as a single stamp, a block of four, or a full sheet of stamps. Any and all combinations of a single issue are collected. When a stamp has its first day of issue, the post office usually holds a program at a local post office, which has some connection to the stamp being issued. Local dignitaries and anyone who has a connection with the stamp being issued are invited to the local ceremony. A program is usually provided detailing various things about the stamp, such as who designed the stamp, what process was used to print the stamp, and what the stamp is meant to commemorate. The program also has an example of the stamp which has been canceled by the local post office. Naturally, these are called first day ceremony programs and are highly collectible. The amateur radio stamp had its first day of issue in Anchorage, Alaska on December 15, 1964. The reason for this selection appears to be due to Mother Nature causing an earthquake in Alaska the previous March of 1964. Hams rose to the occasion and provided much-needed communication to the outside world after the quake. So when the amateur radio stamp was issued, Anchorage was selected to honor the hams and their contributions to the recovery effort after the earthquake. According to the official program, the site of the first day ceremony was the Anchorage Westward Hotel and held at 12 noon. The host for the program was the Rotary Club of Anchorage. The mayor of Anchorage, E. E. Rasmussen, led a local delegation at the presentation. The postmaster of Anchorage, Tony Schwamm, along with J.B. Christensen, associate to Regional Director, Post Office Department, were also in attendance. Chief United States Postal Inspector Harry B. Monto gave the address and presentation at the ceremony. Amateurs present were Leo E. Ohlendorf, KL7CAH, President of the Anchorage Amateur Radio Club, Robert M. Booth, Jr., W3PS, representing Herbert Hoover, Jr., President of the American Radio Relay League, Leroy J. Davis, KL7CUK, and John Carter, KL7DRW. There was also some controversy about the stamp at the time of its issue. Political controversy reared its ugly head because of Senator Barry Goldwater, K7UGA. Goldwater was the Republican candidate for president in November of 1964. Apparently, there was some feeling in the Democratic administration of the time that Goldwater could use the amateur radio stamp for political advantage. This might have something to do with the stamp being released in December of 1964. The stamp's year of issue was also the 50th anniversary of the American Radio Relay League. It seems some hams felt the stamp should honor amateur radio as a whole rather than just the ARRL. From my reading, it appears the league had a great deal to do with the lobbying of the post office to create an amateur radio stamp. From what I can determine, it took several years of lobbying the post office by the ARRL before the post office agreed to a stamp. That it was issued during the league's 50th anniversary is probably due to the league's efforts in lobbying for an amateur radio stamp. In my reading, I also discovered an area of stamp collecting called First Day Covers. An FDC is an envelope, usually 4 by 6 inches, with a design on the left side of the cover relating to the stamp being issued. The design on the cover is called a cachet. This envelope has the stamp affixed by the person submitting the cover or covers to the designated first day post office. It is canceled by the post office of the city in which the stamp first goes on sale, hence a first day cover. First day covers are arranged from mass-produced covers from companies like Artcraft and Fleetwood down to individuals who produce just a few covers for their own use and maybe to sell or trade with other cachet makers. The covers, which are mass-produced, are not very expensive, while the small cachet makers' covers can command premium prices. Modern first day covers, starting with covers from about the early 1950s or so, are always collected without an address on them. Addressed covers after the 50s are usually not highly valued by collectors. When I first started to collect the amateur radio stamp covers, I bought addressed covers and later replaced them with unaddressed ones. It was a cheap way to start a collection. I started my collection in what might be called reverse order. The usual way collections are started is by collecting a topic first. Radio should have been my first general topic, and then later amateur radio. But at first I was only interested in the amateur radio stamp and the FDCs. Later, after I had filled quite a few first day cover albums, I became interested in other stamps and FDCs which had a connection to radio. I now have stamps and covers on F.B. Morse, that's CW, G. Marconi, earlier radio, electronics, and other countries' stamps and FDCs issued to honor local ham groups or national amateur radio organizations. The Morse, Marconi, and electronics stamps and covers are not too difficult to find at stamp shows or stamp dealers. The hard part comes with the amateur radio stamps and covers of other countries. Having chased EX over the years, I at least had some experience using the mails to foreign countries. I'm often asked, it must be expensive to collect stamps and first day covers, or your collection must be valuable now. The answer to the first is, not really. If you buy stamps from a reputable stamp dealer and go to stamp shows on a regular basis, you can accumulate a nice collection at reasonable prices. If you check prices in the various publications listed in the additional information section, you can get an idea of the current prices for stamps and covers. After all, you wouldn't buy a new radio without checking out the dealer prices first. Having collected for over 15 years, I suppose the value of my total collection, for insurance purposes, as they say on Antiques Roadshow, might range in the $500 to $600 range. My dream of retiring to that DX hotspot on the beaches of Tahiti will have to wait a while longer. My main interest is still amateur radio. Collecting amateur radio stamps and covers can be a nice addition to an already great hobby. When the bands are closed and the sun has banked the fire in its solar furnace, I pull out my stamps and FDCs and examine them all over again. One last note. The Scott Stamp Catalog uses the designation 1260 for the amateur radio stamp. This article titled Amateur Radio Stamps is by author Robert Cash Dollar, NR8U, November Romeo 8. Uniform. Let's see if we can fit in another short article titled The Time Capsule. The author, Gerd, G-E-R-D, Schrick, S-C-H-R-I-C-K, call sign WB8IFM, Whiskey Bravo 8, India Foxtrot Mike. Going to roll stuff often leads to surprise findings. So, when Senna Dixon sorted out belongings of one of her sisters who had recently passed away, she found the framed picture with her dad in the center of it. For me, it started with an email forwarded to me by QCWA President John Johnston, W3BE, with a dry comment quoting, "Gert, here is an offer you can't refuse," close quote. Quoting again, "I am the daughter of Willis Bill Hinman. I remember my father being very active in QCWA when I was growing up. He passed away in 1978, however. My sister just recently passed, and I have run across a framed group picture with the caption, Quarter Century Wireless Association, Peerless Mill Inn, October 13, 1966. This would have been the date and chapter. I was wondering if anyone in your organization might be interested in having this photo," close quote, said the email. Several emails later, my wife, looking over my shoulder, commented, "We do know this lady. She is with the Dayton Theater Guild and one time stopped by the house and brought back my glasses that I had lost there." Senna had been a longtime volunteer for the Theater Guild in ticket sales and other endeavors, and she also remembered our name. So Senna stopped by the house to bring the picture. We had a nice chat. She mentioned that her dad coined the word hamvention, but the sister, who also became a ham and now lived in Detroit, probably would know more about her dad. I mentioned that I had met her dad early on after I had gotten my reciprocal license and had made contacts with some hams in Dayton's sister city, Augsburg, which was in 1968. Bill, called W8UX, got me connected with the Dayton Radio Club. I could not join the QCWA. I only had 17 years in at the time. Senna mentioned her dad had a black QSL card, so I got my box out labeled Local Hams and took a look, and just about when I was about to give up to flip through the large stack of unsorted cards, did we find two cards, one marked with the day we first met and one with his Texas address where he retired to, and marked with the day he became a silent key, which was on 12/15/1978. Since his wife Marion also became a ham, her call was WA8HWL, was also a part of the QSL. The hamvention had a prominent mention on the card supporting Senna's comment that he came up with the term. Looking at the 1966 picture, I only recognize a few faces, of course. Senna could identify her dad, who was right in the center. Now the problem was to possibly identify the others. Not an easy task. The black and white photo was of excellent quality, done by a professional photographer. Immediately obvious is the fact that everyone is nicely dressed in suit, shirt, and tie. Although they probably knew a picture was going to be taken, dressing like that at the time was quite common. Compare this with today's lax style of attire. Going through the box with my old documents, I came across a 1988 article, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chapter Quarter Century Wireless Association, or A Brief History of Chapter 9. It mentioned all the chapter members of the club, that it was founded in 1957, 10 years after QCWA was formed, and it had a list of all the past presidents. I am almost certain this write-up, dated 28 February 1988, by a committee of four, was submitted to the journal and might be found checking the journals later that year. Rob Rusk, N0UF, our webmaster, also was informed about the picture and immediately indicated his interest to add it to his historical website. So we needed to scan it for that purpose, and for that I had to take the picture out of the frame. Steve, K8UD, did the scanning. The next morning, I carefully removed the nails that held down the back cardboard, removed the cardboard, and peeled off the picture. Lo and behold, it was a photo of an airplane. I pulled away the next sheet. What did I get? The photo of a boat, a large freighter. How many more pictures were there? Well, there was another photo of a platoon of marching Air Force ladies, and then, surprise, two more QCWA group photos from 1962 and 1964. Then finally, I held the 1966 group photo in my hand. I also noticed the piece of paper that had fallen out containing a complete listing of all the hams in the 1966 pictures. Folks, there's more to the article, but I'm just about out of time. But I will tell you that that photograph in black and white is on page 45 of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal for the winter of 2006. So I'll conclude now with the credits. You've been listening to the Quarter Century Wireless Association, QCWA Journal, for the winter of 2006. The editor is Douglas Walbridge. The business office is P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, 01705-3247. And the email address, qcwagm@rcn.com. Your reader, my name is Bob Zeta. My call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo, Lima, Foxtrot. This recording is being furnished by the Courage Handy Ham System in collaboration with the Quarter Century Wireless Association for the ultimate promotion of amateur radio as a hobby. The Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. The recording is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members and, of course, QCWA members. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. I'll spell that. H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M at courage.org. And our website at the Courage Handy Ham System is www.handyham.org. Thanks again for listening along with me here for the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal reading, 7388.